Hey, baby chickens, I just wanted to take a second to thank you for checking us out. We bring you this little podcast here absolutely free every week at travelingtights.podomatic.com. And now, available for free download and subscription on iTunes. Boom! Instant traveling tights. And as always, we need your help to spread the word. Tell a friend, a coworker, a loved one, or that guy at the sandwich shop with the shaky hands. You do that for us, and we'll keep doing this for you.
Welcome to the Traveling Tights.
Charge it, oh my goodness. Dalton Castle all the way to the floor.
Now, as much as I don't care for you, this person cares for you even less.
I'm fighting Dalton Castle.
Dead left. You gotta be kidding me. Hit him.
This is the Traveling Tights.
That's the noise I'm making. Welcome to the Traveling Tights. My name is Dalton Castle. I am your host and a very, very sick man. Well, I'm not even sure I'm sick. I've just been waking up every morning for this past week feeling like I swallowed one of my cats. And just this morning, I couldn't find one of them. So I feel like that might be a possibility now. And now I've got this horrendous voice. Like, the throat only hurts in the morning, and then it loosens up a little bit, but then I sound like I should be somebody's Aunt Dot for the rest of the night. Like, oh, darlings, you don't know what it's like to be alone at my age. Since Harold died, I've been nothing but in the company of parakeets. Don't get me wrong, I get drunk with my parakeet, and sometimes sprinkle a little sunflower seeds on my areolas. But you don't know what Aunt Dot goes through. This is it. If this voice sticks, I'll be Aunt Dot for the rest of my life. No longer the charismatic milkshake on the radio, the peacock in the wrestling ring, the jackass on the comedy stage, or the all-around galactic gladiator that I once was. I'll be Aunt Dot who drinks with birds. And because my voice hurts so much, I don't want to talk all that much. We do have a great show for you. My throat won't take away from anything on this podcast. Our guest today, Matt Hardy. I met up with him a couple weeks ago, and we'll take a listen to a nice sit-down interview I had with Hardy. And WrestleMania just happened. So I think we need to touch on that a little bit, because I watched it, loved it. I love wrestling, and WrestleMania, the entire program, reiterated that fact to me. Bobby Fish met up with me, and we watched it together on my couch, which was very foolish of us to not pull out the recording equipment when we had the rare opportunity to be in the same room together. So I take blame for that. I think we were both a little fixated on the fact that we're about to watch WrestleMania and we're excited, so we totally forgot about the podcast. But I mean, I'm in the studio now, and we're gonna go to the phone lines and check in with Bobby, who was actually in New Orleans the morning before WrestleMania happened, and hopefully he can give us a little insight on what the whole scene was about. So let me try to ice my throat here. Actually, let's take the call now. We got Bobby on the line. Bobby!
Dalton!
Hey, buddy. We're such dummies to not have taken advantage a few days ago when you were actually in my apartment. We were watching WrestleMania together.
Right.
We could
have... some friends of yours.
Old teammates from my college wrestling team came over.
Yeah, who are now friends of mine, because I could tell that they liked me more.
No, they did. I kept, like, seeing a few of them. They were, like, whispering to each other. I'm like, this guy's way better than Dalton. Why do we hang out with him?
Right. I took advantage of the situation and decided to add a few new friends to my... I think you know what I'm getting at.
I was going to say your Facebook account is going way up with the friends numbers now.
Yep.
This was kind of a unique setting. We watched WrestleMania from my couch in Albany. You, that morning, were in New Orleans for WrestleCon. You wrestled the night before Ring of Honor was there, and you had the pleasure of going down to the big pilgrimage of WrestleMania.
The rap with that is that there's so many wrestling fans in one concentrated area that, like,
a lot of BO.
Everything is bumped up. Like, you go places and there, you just, we're walking the French Quarter, and to watch a group of people randomly break out into the yes chant, and then it catch like wildfire, and next thing you know, there's a whole block in the French Quarter that's chanting yes and raising their arms the same way that Brian does. It's pretty crazy looking.
Can you imagine, like, if there was anybody around who doesn't like or know a damn thing about wrestling, how confused?
Yeah, I mean, would have to be, because it's such a universal language that everyone else is speaking that you don't get. It would be, I would liken it to, you know, being in a foreign country and you don't know a lick of the language.
Right, yeah, and everybody in that country wears black T-shirts and has greasy hair.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're there working, but you had a small amount of downtime. How did you enjoy it?
I managed to enjoy it quite a bit from what I remember.
Yeah, you did come over. Bobby was in pretty rough shape when he arrived at my place.
Yeah, I think I may have texted you the pictures.
No, you showed me on your phone there. There was just a picture of you, I think, holding a half-eaten protein bar, passed out on a couch.
Yes, I mean, you have to understand that even in a state of intoxication, I've got my mind on a higher intake of protein.
Oh, I'm so hammered right now. You know it tastes great? 30 grams of protein.
Well, I don't think it's what would taste great. I think even in my inebriated state, I'm saying, you know, I can almost bet that with all the empty calories I consumed, there was not a high enough amount of protein there. I'm going to do something about that. I'm a go-getter.
Nobody will doubt you on that.
Right.
I 100% will agree with that statement.
Looking back, pinpoint, though, where I went wrong.
Which was when?
Now, you know me well enough.
I do.
That if I am to venture out for a night, which is rare, but I would say is becoming less rare over the last few months. I generally stick
to a slow slope.
A certain variety of libation. You being a dear friend of mine, do you care to wager a guess as my preferred spirit?
Oh, see, I don't think I ever watched you get into that. I know you dig Guinness.
Okay, so no, not, I guess spirit was the wrong choice of word.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I was going to then begin to describe it, that it's thick. And it's often frothy on top.
And black.
Right, which would be the only thing that would lead you away from load. Because I could see where the two would be confusing.
Yeah. No, all right. So I stepped over the punch there. But yeah.
Worries. No worries. We're back on track. Unabated.
I got really scared that we were going to go like 5 minutes talking to each other and one penis pun was not going to come up.
Right, but that's what gets us thrown off the air, so we're going to avoid that. So I pinpointed where I went wrong, and what had happened, I had found another group of wrestlers. I do remember heading inside with, we'll call him my boss, and enjoying a shot of Jameson with my boss.
The big boss man, we'll just
see. The spirit of Ray Traylor himself.
Which means you were pretty gone if you were seeing the big boss man.
Right, which is also, we'll talk about this, it's for another episode of the podcast, but I have a new wrestling gimmick called the Big Moss Man.
I think we talked about this last week, actually.
Oh, okay, so yeah. Then we won't visit it on another podcast.
We will, because we haven't decided out his moveset yet, but we'll get to that later, yeah.
All right, so... We then went to an establishment called The Swamp. Said boss was returning the drink favor. The Swamp, unfortunately, was a place that did not have Guinness. Therefore, I said, get me whatever you're having.
Yeah, and he was drinking Jet Fuel.
He was having something called Swamp Juice.
Did you ever ask what's in it?
It was somewhere... during my consumption of this Swamp Juice that the night begins to blur.
And Robin Thicke just starts to play in your head.
Fast forward to that first picture I showed you, which was taken by one Kyle O'Reilly, who was my roommate, who found me in our room, passed out with the protein bar in hand, half eaten, at about quarter after four. And that was in my attempt to make the 4 a.m. shuttle.
Well, you did. I mean, I'm really proud of you for staggering your way out there, making your way back home.
So that second picture that I showed you of me passed out in the hotel lobby, that was actually taken from somebody else at about 5:15, and that was my failed attempt at the 5 o'clock show. Fortunately for me, Matt Taven was with a group that included Todd Sinclair, who was driving to the airport, who took pity on my unconscious self and allowed me a ride to the airport so that I could get home.
Ah, you're such a mess.
Yes.
So
I represented myself and the Capital Region well in my jaunt to WrestleMania in the French Quarter, Bourbon Street, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, proud of you. And I can't wait to recreate it this weekend with you.
Yes, I think there were many people, including my mother, who were very proud of my accomplishments this weekend.
All right, Bobby. Thanks for checking in with us, buddy.
Yes, sir.
There you have it. It looks like the people of WrestleMania got to witness a little bit of Bob the Slob. And I look forward to seeing some Bob the Slob this weekend as him and I and a little Taven action on the road together. The new wave Freebirds hitting the road. And I know the world is pumped to see that happen. I want to take a quick break. We still got that Matt Hardy interview to get to, but let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with the Traveling Tights.
Now for another great moment in wrestling history with RJ City.
I'm sitting on a veranda in Connecticut. It's 1996. Me, Sean, Hunter, Vince is making cappuccinos. They tell me they're putting a new group together, something that nobody's ever seen before, and they want a hand signal or a gesture. They were thinking maybe the thumbs up or an okay sign. And I said, boys, the times are a-changing. People want something a little more vulgar, a little off-color, something a little more blue. How about you just point to your penises? And Hunter said, Oh, you mean like this? And I said, trippy. No, make a big deal out of it, like you just made an entree you're really proud of. So we tried it a couple times and sat back down, and Vince came over with the drinks. And I said, whoa, Vin, there's a lot of foam in this cappuccino. He says, oh, I'm sorry, I'll make you another one. I said, no, that's okay. I'll just suck it. And the rest, as they say, is history.
This is the Traveling Tights.
Welcome back. And my voice is shittier than ever. Although it is in pretty decent shape for the sit-down I had with our guest for this week, Matt Hardy, who I met up with a couple weeks ago at Northeast Wrestling, where him and I had to escape the action and lock ourselves in an equipment/ice room, which contained no white athletic tape. I know there was no tape in there because I searched it very thoroughly and couldn't find a single roll to steal. My heart was broken. But I was hanging out on a cold tile floor with Matt, and we got to talking, kind of picked up where we left off about a year and a half ago. Matt came on the Traveling Tights when it was just a YouTube show, which if you want to go check out some fun video, go see the first episode on YouTube, and then get your glycogen levels back up, stretch out, and get ready for a whole new conversation that'll take you on a roller coaster. Woo. I do want to give you a quick heads up, though. The first 30 seconds of this segment, there is a weird humming in the background, but I promise you, after about 30 seconds, we take care of the problem, and it is not heard for the rest of the interview. So let's take a quick little break to transition, and we'll be right back with the man who loves grapes, Matt Hardy.
First off, Matt Hardy.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for joining me on the ice room floor.
You got it. I'm happy to be here. We're actually on the floor right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you're nice enough to do this, and we're doing it actually while you gear up. It's I can't thank you enough. That's great.
No problem, man. Gearing up and getting the old war paint on.
While you put your gear on, should I take my gear off?
Sure, it'll be great. You know what I mean?
Really awkward.
Keep the universe at peace.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me plug this right. The buzz is gone. All right. I'm plugging the ice machine. I just want to apologize one more thing. Right before I asked you to do this, I sat down on the bench right after I did my match, all sweaty-assed. And I sat directly on your phone, and I'm sorry for that.
Well, thank you. It's okay. You know, all's well that ends well, and fortunately, either you didn't have enough ass, or my phone was strong enough that it didn't break, and it just had a little bit of sweat. But you know, it's a water resistant phone, so we just wiped it right off. We keep moving on.
Yeah, I mean, and I take great comfort knowing that anytime you answer your phone or text, your finger or your ear is going to touch directly to my ass sweat.
Yep, right on.
And that's something I'm gonna hold on to with great pride.
We'll always be connected.
You're one of the few people who have been off global television for quite a while and have somehow managed to keep yourself incredibly relevant. And like I know, I have my theory on how you've done it, but do you have any opinion on how you've done this?
Yeah, I would love to hear your theory first.
No. Well, mine involves a spaceship and a rare crystal.
Oh, so yours is actually fictional.
No, I don't know. You got a really good online presence. You seem to... I've seen you somehow in the same week have tens of thousands of people love you, and then the next week hate you. They're not the same people, but they're 4 hours apart, and I think that takes a big talent.
I think there's 10,000 that love me. There might be about 2,000. That's pretty much the Ring of Honor fan base, you know, or ECW fan base. They're a little smaller, but... It's one of those things. I've just really got to that point, and I understand who I am in life, you know, the good and the bad, and it's just really easy to lean one way or the other, whatever direction I need to go, and just try and put a little bit of honesty in it, you know, and I can kind of make it work, you know, and it seems pretty believable. I do think the online thing is what's helped me more than anything else. Being on Ring of Honor TV time to time has helped me just have your face on.
TV's
the key to everything, but I think is... The World Wide Web and the Internet grows, and the WWE Network, I can tell, has also been very beneficial to me. I mean, because there's going to be a lot of new fans that just started watching now that they don't know about Matt Hardy and the Hardy Boys, but are being introduced to that whole concept through the network, which is very cool.
How many young boys do you think are, like, searching you and they think they're going to get a mystery story or something?
Maybe
I read these books.
maybe a few, you know. But if they're that young, I don't know if they'll think that it's actually the old Hardy Boys, because we're the new Hardy Boys in comparison. That's it. But you know, just doing that, and I think all of us, you know, even yourself. I mean, it helps everyone with the power of the internet now to kind of to brand yourself, so to say, with Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and whatever you may use, just because you can kind of build a home base and build a presence around it and actually use your own creative control to kind of dictate where your character goes. And not a huge audience is going to see it, but there's going to be a certain amount of audience that you can really help.
And they're going to be a loyal audience.
And they're going to be a very loyal audience, you know, and they'll do it. Like one of the big things I do at my table out there when people come through and take pictures with me, I say, hey, make sure if you are on Twitter, tweet me at Matt Hardy Brand, I'll give you an old retweet, you know, and just the interactiveness that has even came from that is really gone a long ways. A lot of people come through and say, hey, I just want to take a picture so that I can tweet, you know, retweet it, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a fun, and it's a very...
And it don't cost nothing.
It's a very interactive thing, you know what I mean?
You seem to care an awful lot still, and I love watching that because I value somebody who still loves it. And have you lost a lot of weight? What's going on here? Are you doing, what are you doing? Are you bulimic?
No, actually.
You're looking fit.
I haven't, I've just, it's one of those things, man. I've just,
And now that all the listeners think that I'm just in here hitting on you.
No, it's okay. You know, old Fat Hardy likes to eat.
Oh, Matt, you're so good and relevant. You're skinny.
it's one of those things. I had intestinal issues when my intestines were kind of poking through my abdominal for a while.
Yeah.
And it was like at a point where I was in WWE and I was getting utilized really strong at that point, and I didn't want to say I was hurt, and I kept.
And the time frame is that? Is that 5 years ago? How long ago?
It was 2008-ish, 2009-ish, 2009. It was 2009. I remember it first started bothering me in 2007, so I went a couple years with it, and then finally in 2009, my intestines ruptured through my abdominal wall, and they had been pinched for a while, And I was told by a doctor, like doctor's orders, not to eat.
When that happens, are you hospitalized or are you at
home? Yeah, well, I had surgery and I was in the hospital for a few days.
Did you have to get a poo bag?
No, I didn't. They were able to correct it. But what the issue was they said, like, red meat and things that are hard to digest. Even at that point when I was almost, like, bloated. And I remember I was so frustrated at the time because I was eating so healthy. And I was doing cardio or whatever. You know, I just couldn't digest food as well as I was supposed to, like a normal person could or whatever, someone that age. And I just think as you get older and I've come to realize, like, my diet has changed quite a bit. And I've gotten to the point where I don't eat red meat. And I hate that because I love steak. And
yeah, you're a country boy.
Yeah, for sure. You know, so it's always a constant thing, like I've upped my cardio. I've made it first thing in the morning. You know, I'm trying to do 45 minutes to an hour a day. And just being supernatural, too. You know, like, with one of those things, which I've been through the periods in life where, you know, I've done different things. And, you know, there's been points where I've just tried to do what I could do to make sure I went to the job and, like, look good and could perform good and move right, even when I should have been in a hospital. You know, but it's one of those things where, you know, I do a couple days a week. I take care of myself during the week. I take my time off, and I really enjoy what I'm doing. I'm having more fun now than I think I've had in a long, long time.
It's a preventional measure and a way to keep going.
It's just learning your body, and I think being able to take care of it.
Let's talk about not taking care of our body. Let's talk about when we're young and dumb growing up. And this could be even before you started wrestling. I think back to my childhood. A lot of things I did when I thought I was having fun.
Right.
Still look back, seem fun, but the older, spry Dalton here, I look and go, man, I should have died doing those things with my friends. That was stupid. Like, what was the most ridiculous activity you found yourself in?
This is probably what I'd say is the most ridiculous activity. We had a cousin that would come in every summer for a couple months when he was out of school from Texas. His name was Little Jim.
Did you call him Texas Jim?
Little Jim. We went by Little Jim.
I'm going to call him Texas Jim.
Yeah, Texas Jim sounds good. Because Jim Sr. was his dad. It was Jim Jr., so we called him Little Jim. Anyway, myself, my brother Jeff, and Little Jim, we had like a little clique. Once in a while, our other cousin would be in, but we were called the Adventurers. And we really prided ourselves. Like, we would draw like little comics, like we were superheroes, whatever. So we would go on, you know, these adventures. Obviously, you're the Adventurers. What else are you going to do?
Do you still have these comic strips?
Yeah, I do. And at one point in these comic strips, we all had powers. And I want to say, like, Jim was real fast. You know, like Quicksilver. I think I could stretch like Reed Richards. I can't remember what Jeff did. He was charismatic and enigmatic. But anyway.
What a superhero. Jeff can make everybody like
him. What a boring ass superhero. Yeah. Dress up and call yourself Willow or something. In these adventures that we'd go on, we had 120 acres. We would, one thing that's just a funny side note, we'd constantly go out and we'd build clubhouses. And like my dad, he was a tobacco farmer, and he had these big ass tobacco sheets that he would use to cover the tobacco in case it rained when he's hauling it off to sell it. And we would take sheets of these plastics and we would nail them into trees and build little clubhouses and what. And he would always find them, and we didn't understand. I mean, sure, it's 120 acres, but like, it's our dad, and he was like a man and we were kids, you know, so obviously there's a lot of land. But beside us was a place called the Cameron Boys Camp, and it's a place where like kids who were just out of control when they were young, or if their parents had died.
It's like a juvie or like a correctional camp kind for
of,
children.
Yes, kind of one of those deals. So they had over 1,000 acres, and they had all kinds of stuff. Once we were down there trespassing, which we constantly did because it was fun, we found that they had a big lake. And they had, like, a diving board if they took the kids to dive. And then they had, like, this real high, it was probably 40, I want to say 50.
A big
it was probably
platform. 40,
a platform up at the top, which people would probably lay out or sun in. You know, they would probably sit up there and lifeguard the other people. But we would go out there and dive off of it into this lake.
And just
thinking about, yeah, like, Jeez. We went out there and we dove in.
They teach people in the Olympics, like, a certain form so they don't break their wrist and
head. We would go out there and we started jumping in with our feet, and eventually we would dive. And like, there were a couple times we hit. Like, one time Jeff dove in and like landed on his back and he thought he was paralyzed. Like, we had to jump in. But I mean, we were jumping in, like, we really had no idea how deep the water was.
No,
we would hit the bottom, you know, what was going on. That was something we constantly did. And looking back at that, like, we could have broken neck or whatever's easy out there.
I did the same. Like, we had a rock quarry like 40 minutes out of town. We would drive to that. It probably was 40 feet high, but like, you had to swing and let go at a certain part, or else you hit the rocks. I never remember my first time doing it. I fell ass first and just like got to give myself, it hurts so bad. Got a little bit of a free enema, so that was.
We actually had a place nearby that people went to locally. It was like a little river where people went to sit, and it was called the Hippie Hole, where you could do that. That's what it was called for some reason. Swing out, rope swing. And it wasn't so much like there were rocks, but there were banks that if you didn't let go, you would swing into or fall into, you know. So
And you did that too?
We certainly did that. But the other thing, which is even a more funny story with the boys' camp, is they had a trolley, which was down there. There was this big ravine.
Like off the rails trolley?
No, a trolley like that you have a wire or a rope, and then you have a handle that you
hold. Like a zip line.
A zip line, yes, okay. Yes. And
I was thinking like a train from San Francisco.
Yeah, and no,
which
course.
Would be way cooler. In
it
the
would
woods.
Be way cooler, but it was a zip line, but it was like a trolley hole that you would hold.
Yep, yep.
But a zip line's probably the
and you go right into, terminology. Into a different tree.
No, what happens was, like I said, it was a big ravine, and it started up at the top where there was this big tree and like a platform
and no water under
it,
you.
And then there was no water. You would just ride down into the bottom of the ravine, and then like it kind of like. It was tied to one thing that would level out, so you would hit and kind of slow down, and it had some things where you hit, like to slow yourself down with your feet. And we had done this, and we did it regularly. Our cousin Jim came in for the following. He came in for Christmas vacation or something in the winter.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, "Oh man, let's go down to the zip line, the trolley, dude, so much fun." And they had a rope tied to it, so that like not only could you hold the zip line, you could have someone underneath you on the rope. Say, "Oh, let's double up and do it."
Yeah.
So.
Quick, this is dangerous. Let's make it worse.
Myself and my cousin went down there, and we're like, okay, cool, we'll do it. And he's like, okay, I got it. It's cool, I'll ride on the bottom. And it was during the winter where it was around the time where maybe March, almost April, it was starting to warm up again, but it had grown up. Like, it hadn't been trimmed, any of the, shrubs or plant life or whatever was there. And so we just went and went down the zip line immediately after being there. I was on the bottom, and I had a tank top. And I remember that whenever we went, immediately, as soon as we took off from the platform, there was a big sag, like, in the line.
Because it was too heavy.
Well, we were too heavy, plus they hadn't tightened it up, and it had all grown up, so they hadn't taken care of it in, like, 6 or 7 months. So whenever it dropped and we were too heavy, where it had grown up, there was all briars. I was submerged underneath the briars. Just my eyes. I remember being.
Wait, what are briars? Are those like pricker bushes? What?
Briars, like
It's ice cream to me.
Maybe so. I guess so. Briars is a more southern terminology. It's like if you're out in the woods, what do you call when you grew up? If there's something that has pricks all over.
Oh, I don't.
You know, if you're gonna get stuck on it.
I just call it prickers.
Maybe
I don't know.
It was prickers.
But I don't know my plant life.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I don't either. I'm lucky I can read and write from where. Considering where I'm from. But anyway, those things were there. There were trees there. And I was all the way submerged. I had cuts and scrapes all across me. And I really felt like, the wave was just... But you couldn't do anything.
And Jim's the one you're holding on to?
I was holding on to the rope. That was
all right.
And Jim got like on his feet, but my whole body was just demolished. Like, I looked like I just came out of like a...
A cat fight?
With
a tiger?
Not just a cat fight, like a Japanese death match. You know what I mean? Like, I came out of there, like I gagged everywhere and had explosions going off like I was destroyed. And like, really, I mean, what if anything would have been down there that I would have hit? Like, you're not thinking about it.
It could have been a rock. Could have been
anything, man.
A spear.
And it was...
Could have been a real trolley.
It could have been a real trolley you hit going head on. And it's 150, 200 feet, the whole distance of the thing,
And and you're picking up speed.
And it's just that thing of being young and crazy and not having fear,
Yeah. Well, it makes you extreme. Are you, you seem to be working, like, all the time. I keep an eye on the Twitter. You're always doing dates. Are you getting across seas a lot?
I was going to go in May, and some stuff came up where a deal I'm doing in Vegas for Future Stars of Wrestling kind of conflicted with it because I kind of guaranteed them they're going to give me the big push, bro. They're going to be the members of the company. So
Vegas belt on you.
Yeah, it should take you to the moon, kid.
Yeah.
Get you
that high-rise stay at the Flamingo.
I really want to go overseas and spend time over there next time.
Yeah,
I go,
do a long stay.
And like maybe do like a weekend of wrestling. I don't want to wrestle too much. I was going to go to Australia, and they had some kind of budget issue for a couple weeks. But I want time where I can kind of have vacation. I want to go to Stonehenge. I've been there, but
to Scotland.
When I was there with WWE, it was 14 or 16 days in, and just go bust your ass the whole while.
Airports.
Don't see shit. So I want to go do that stuff.
That's
so
good. Yeah,
Australia,
find using wrestling to your advantage.
UK, Germany, and maybe Japan at some point. So
yeah. Before we end this year, I know we talked about you and your brother coming up riding on the road with like. Hardcore carnies who just took your money and would take you for more money, or else they would leave you on the side of the road.
Yes.
Do you remember your first trip into the WWE locker room and the feeling going through your head or the awkwardness of it all?
Very much so. I remember it like yesterday. And This might shock you, but one of the matches that was very inspiring to us in the beginning was Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon. The first ladder match they had.
Oh, it was loud.
So these guys.
Shawn Michaels just came out to the ring now.
Yeah. These guys that had the ladder match, and we were going up there. I remember we got there, we saw all the ring trucks, and we're like, exhilarating, almost like you're going to hyperventilate, you know, like it's so exciting. You know,
stomachs and
you know, hearts. I was 19, Jeff was 17, he had to lie about his age because he wasn't old enough to legally be there. We went in, and I remember we go in, and they point to us. Tony Gurria pointed.
You walking in with somebody or no questions? They let you right in?
We had a group of guys because they knew, like, hey, here's the Italian stand with the paddy wagon full of job guys. You know what I mean? So he was there. We walk around. They go, okay, you guys are dressing over in this other room. And I remember we walked around the corner, and there was a couple of the crates in the back that they load stuff, and whatever.
The roadie kits, whatever.
And Scott Hall and Shawn Michaels were sitting on two of them, and they were laughing, joking with one another. And it was just the realization, like, obviously we knew these guys got along, that it was an entertainment aspect.
That's when it became real to you. Or when you realized
it. Just solidified it. Like,
the magic was ruined.
We'd already done this, but WWE, it's just these guys are just like us. You know? Maybe we can do this because, oh my God, like, you see these guys, they have these epic matches, but, you know, is it the same there as it is here? Because there is it. That is, you know, heaven in
right,
so many ways.
This is what we've been working for.
And just seeing that and the realization, like, oh my God, like, it is just the same. You know, they do, it's such a grand show whenever you see this on TV, but it is just the same as the wrestling we've started doing, you know. So it was a powerful thing, especially seeing those two guys first.
Yeah, it sounds like it lit the fire under your tushy there.
It was just like the realization, because, like, you know, it's almost one of those things. I think all of us envision how things are, but until you actually experience it, you don't really know.
Yeah.
You know, like, you hear about people that, like, have had these near-death experiences and see something on the other side. And you think about, like, in your mind, you can plug and play it back, like, I think it'd be like this, but, like, to actually see it and visualize it, and it'd be there in, like, a tangible form in front of you.
So you're telling me, from what I'm gathering, it's just a positive experience, that first trip in there.
Kept
out of trouble, nothing like that, and...
Yeah, it was positive.
If anything, it just, it helped you.
Here's a funny note that I can tell you. I don't know if this story's... I've maybe said...
I don't even know this, Matt, but I don't like to joke around. So let's skip the funny stuff. But tell me anyways.
The story is that whenever we went there, it was a positive experience just because, you know, like I said, we saw that and it was just like, wow, this is unbelievable. If we don't do anything else, at least we did this once. And we had matches that night. I was wrestling on the live television program against Nikolai Volkov, and I'd already been told by the agent for the match, like, I just wanted to, which is Tony Gurria, he said, I want you to know, kid, he said, if you go out here, it's live TV, he says, if you fuck anything up, you will never come back. Vince McMahon will never have you again.
No pressure, though.
Immediately after that, Nikolai comes and says, oh, hi, nice to meet you. What's your name? Matt. Okay, Matt, I just want you to know, very easy. I just do it in the ring. And he says, I said, well, I just don't want to mess anything up. He said, oh, don't worry about it. I mess up every match. It's going to be terrible. And he walked on the moon. Oh my God, my life's over. My run's over before it began.
The bar got set so high, and then the ramp you were delivered was like a footstool.
And then Jeff wrestled Scott Hall. And Scott Hall was supposed to wrestle one of Stallion's guys, and like 15 minutes before their match, the guy said, I can't take his finish, it'll hurt me, my neck hurts, I can't take it. So he was mad. The agents were scrambling to get somebody quick.
17-year-old Jeff says,
and the Stallion says
nothing.
Get this guy. He's like a rubber band. He can do anything.
Oh, all right. I was messed up. I thought Jeff said no thanks.
No. No way. Jeff would have done anything. You could have cut Jeff in half and he would have somehow lived. No, one of Stallion's other older guys.
Yeah, and he really got lucked out because
Jeff got in the spot. They had like 15 minutes. Scott Hollis was frustrated, and they were going up real quick. And I just remember seeing poor Jeff there. He was like fucking pale as shit, like no tan. Like
110 pounds.
Yeah. And they went and held the match, and like he was really aggressive. He was like, come on, because Jeff was trying to sell so big for him as opposed to like selling back up some. And you know, he did a thing where he had him over his shoulder, like Rick Steiner would do a drum in the turnbuckle, and Jeff's knee hit the pole. And he felt bad after that. And like, once we came in the bag, he's like, yeah, I'm sorry about that. And I remember Jeff was just sitting back, Jeff, One of the guys, the guy who didn't wrestle him, had told someone else, because they were like buddies, because we were outsiders, you know, and the rest of the group was, you know.
Yeah, it's weird.
And the other guy said, I went there, he said, yeah, they didn't like the match. Said he oversold, he wasn't any good. And then a guy came up, Jeff said, yeah, he said, I want you to know we overheard. They're not even going to put your match on TV. Like, you were the shit, you weren't any good, they're not going to put your match on TV, it sucked, you're terrible, they're not going to invite you back. And Jeff was so upset, you know, like young 17-year-old Jeff, who'd already been hurt, and Scott Hall and the Click, they were always super nice to us after that, because they felt bad for Jeff. Jeff had a Vanilla Ice haircut, they started calling him Ice. And whenever we left that day, Jeff was just like, we got the man, Jeff said, I just want to go home, I never want to come back again, I'm just, it was such a terrible day. And then 2 days later, he wrestled X-Pac, and they had a real good match, and like, brought him back to life, so like, all's well that ends well.
It doesn't. It's not always the end when you think it. All right. Well, I'll plug the Twitter at the end of the episode. Is there anything else I need to know about you got going on that I don't know about?
You know, I'm at all things Matt Hardy Brand, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. MattHardyBrand.com is the website.
Is GeoCities? Make sure you get that. Matt Hardy MySpace.
and the big thing I'd really recommend, especially because I'm sure someone in your family has a birthday coming up. Go to shopmatthardy.com. We ship globally, and we do the best merchandise there is. And it is personally handled and packaged by Rebby Scott. She'll put a kiss on it.
Oh, and if you want, Matt's selling his cell phone with my ass sweat.
Oh, you know it. Special. Limited edition. There's only one of them.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
You got it, man. Girl, I want to make you sweat. Sweat till you can't sweat no more.
This is the Traveling Tights.
There you have it. Matt Hardy, what a guy, is willing to let me sit on his iPhone with my sweaty tushy and not even get mad about it. I was really afraid it was going to ruin our friendship, but it looks like we're going to be best friends forever. Or for as long as my butt sweats and he has a phone. Actually, I hope that doesn't become our thing. That would be weird on both ends. Before we close up shop here, I do want to address something that I feel is kind of important. Earlier this week, it was WrestleMania, but the world of professional wrestling lost an iconic face, and oh so commonly, way too early. The Ultimate Warrior has passed. And I think we can all relate to some of our childhood memories, to watching the bright colors, the giant muscles, the awesome hair, the and the face paint. And if you were a child and liked wrestling and did not tie shoelaces on your arms, well, then I don't want to be your friend. But again, when this podcast was a YouTube show, the Sisterhood of the Traveling Tights, I had a guest. I had a couple guests on the show who encountered the Warrior, who was trying to produce a television show called The Warrior Show, where he would take punk bands and make them work out until they puke. It was only the first episode, and he had a band called Asking Alexandria, who I've come to know pretty decent in the music world. They've stopped in a couple times and talked with me. In this particular interview I had with Asking Alexandria, I wanted to know all about the Warrior, and they had to say this. I find out you guys were on his pilot episode, The Warrior.
Yeah. Yep.
The episode is actually on. People should go check it out, but...
Don't.
Arguably the best and worst experience of my life. You haven't been... smashed down to earth until it's happened by the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
He's intense.
Very intense.
Well, tell me about this. Let me just give an outline. The show is you guys show up, he yells at you and makes you work out until you puke. And that's pretty much
the that's
premise.
It. Yeah.
That's like it.
That's it.
That's the show.
Did you have any idea what you were walking into?
No.
Not a clue.
They couldn't film the sex scene.
Yeah, all we were told before going in was you're going to go in and you're just going to do like a little workout with him. Like, that's all we knew.
And you're like, oh, yeah.
And we were
like
already
idea.
Like, this ain't cool. So we're taking booze.
Yeah.
Again, I encourage you to go check out the full episode on that. They get pretty in depth about their experience with the Ultimate Warrior. Go to YouTube, check out Sister to the Traveling Tights, Asking Alexandria. And with that being said, let's wrap up this week. My throat hurts. I want to thank my guest this week, Matt Hardy. You can get at him on Twitter at Matt Hardy Brand or MattHardyBrand.com. That'll link you up to everything that you need to know about him. Got to thank Bobby for checking in with us and being a horrible co-host yet again. And if you'd like to invite Bobby or myself to your next wrestling event, the best way to contact us at the Dalton Castle, that's my Twitter, or Bobby at @TheBobbyFish. And don't forget to check him out every week on Ring of Honor Television, ROHWrestling.com, TravelingTights.Podomatic.com. That's the one way you can find all the episodes. Or you can look us up on iTunes. Download every episode of The Traveling Tights for free and subscribe at iTunes. That's the end of our episode. Thank you for listening. For Matt Hardy, Bobby Fish, I'm Dalton Castle, saying to you,